regrette rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal. Mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie, car mes jours, ça commence avec toi.
Okay, well, I'm covered in goosebumps. Oh, my God. Oh, that's Edith Piaf, the little sparrow. Why was she called the little sparrow, I want to know?
She was a tiny, tiny creature.
Yeah?
I mean, tiny, like a child almost.
Oh. And was that captured in La Vie en Rose?
Yeah. You see this little, the woman,
frail,
it's a kind
small.
Of magical performance, that performance in La Vie en Rose.
Mm. Magical has been applied to performances by one of our guests on this edition of The Song Is You, Kathleen Chalfant. Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here in person.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. And your other half, your other whole, better half, how do you refer to this man beside you?
We've been together for so long that I refer to this man beside me as my family.
Ah.
That's me.
Henry Chalfant.
Yeah.
Henry, welcome. What a pleasure
Thank
to have you,
you
here,
great
too.
Great to be here.
So we're doing this back-to-back. This is great.
Yes.
But a lot of these, are, well, each of you picked songs, and but some of these you share, right, as favorites.
This is, what we've just heard is one of our favorites. And I don't know that I think Kathy would love the one that's coming up next. Which is actually the one that I brought is a rap. It's from 1992, around there. And it's about the last time I was listening to rap, because the music that we play and that we love also has to do with our love of travel. So we go into different languages. And it has to do with our work, you know. So this was in the 80s. I was so involved with hip-hop. And I used to listen to Chuck Chillout and Red Alert, who were doing amazing things on the radio in the early 80s, actually mixing on the radio. And it was at a time before the form kind of solidified into, you know, rap.
Right.
And it was a great deal of exploration and experimenting was going on. So this, by 1992, I was almost over it. And this was an amazing record by Naughty by Nature, called Everything Is Going to Be All Right.
Well, let's hear, before we hear that, because I have to explore just a little bit on Edith Piaf. And Kathleen, you're sitting here obviously very moved by the music, by your life together. Is that what you're thinking right now? Yeah.
I am. We've been married for 42 years. I was 21. Henry was 26. So we have been together two-thirds of our lives. Mm. And we've been, like all people, through our ups and downs. We're now grandparents. Mm. We have two wonderful children, and we know it's you don't think about it all the time, but when you asked, what do I call Henry besides Henry? We are each other's family.
And in a sense that you almost discovered what family means by finding Henry?
I think it was lucky. If you get married when you're 21, 26, what do you know? We were lucky. We picked the right people in some miraculous way, so that you really can say after 42 years, for all the good and the bad of it, je ne regrette rien.
Je ne regrette. Yeah. No regrets is what the song's about, right?
Mm-hmm. I regret nothing. After all the ups and downs and the sadness and the joy.
And
but
it's
I regret
true for
nothing.
You both? Is that true?
It is. Yeah. It is. Maybe I would have not said that 20 years ago, but it hadn't fully, you know,
fully
come
formed.
Through and formed, and it is true. I mean, even from the beginning, you know, you don't want to leave your original family completely, but you don't want to live with them, you know? So I did get a new family.
Uh-huh.
And now it's a burgeoning family with grandchildren, and it's just such an incredible delight.
I wish I could describe for our listeners Kathleen's face, hearing you talk, Henry, about family and your lives together. It's so beautiful. How blessed.
Lucky we are. And lucky people we are.
Blessed we are to have you here in the studio and playing some music. And let me just do the business here. Kathleen Chalfant, in case our listeners don't know, a Tony Award nominee, Angels in America, Wit, playing Vivian Baring, who must be very close and near and dear to your own heart, and so many others. And then there's Henry, whose work is a part of permanent collections at MoMA and others. You've a film videographer. Now, I want to know, entering into the next song we're about to hear, how does a man who graduates from Stanford in Greek, majoring in Greek, become a hip-hop expert?
Well, I was an artist in New York, and I started documenting graffiti on the trains. So there you have one connection. Graphine in Greek means to write. So graffiti on the trains, ta-da, is the writers call it writing. The graffiti writers call it writing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that, and there was a sense of, which learned from a professor at Stanford, that he always carried around paper mache in his pouch when he traveled, and when he'd be sitting drinking ouzo and Retsina in the backyard of some restaurant, yakking to the maitre d', or the owner, he'd say, well, actually, you know, right over here in the garden, there's this old stone, there's something on it. And Ted, the professor, would take his papier-mâché, and he'd take a pressing of this old stone. And he had an incredible collection of writings that he took in informal ways like that. So that's the heritage of it for me. Yeah. Not that I was very conscious of it, mind you.
Oh.
I just sort of fell into admiring graffiti and then getting all involved in hip-hop at the time.
And so this song, again, is by Naughty by
Naughty
Nature.
Naughty by Nature.
And it's called
Everything's Gonna Be All Right, which, of course, you'll see is not. It's a very moving song. I mean, even when I listened to it yesterday after not hearing it for a while, I was very moved by it.
And how, so, it begins where, this song? It's got an interesting...
It begins in a hospital. It begins in a hospital. Somebody has been killed, you know, a young kid. And it goes from there, a child of the ghetto talking about what it's like. Hmm. And
let's hear.
Nurse Johnson, is the mother still in the recovery room?
Yes, Dr. Blair.
Okay, I'll go to the waiting room and inform the father it's a boy.
I'm afraid there is no father, sir.
Another ghetto bastard, huh?
I'm afraid so.
Well, put him with the rest of the born losers.
All right, doctor. A shame, isn't it?
Not a shame, a problem.
Dr. Blair.
Some catch a bad one, and some leave the job half done. I was one who never had send dope for every bottle sold. Hell no, I say there's gotta be a better way. But hey, never gamble in a game that you can play. I'm flown and flown and going and no one knowing and not now. How will I do it? How will I make it? I won't, that's how.
And our engineer, Kyle Lynch, doing a great job of editing out the important word.
Yeah, right.
They are naughty by nature, yeah?
They're naughty by nature, yeah. And the words do give it a lot of power.
I wish, I wish that we could keep the F word in, but because of the FCC and certain restrictions, we can't. But it's a power word, right?
It is a power word.
Wow.
But here, I mean, power is very important because this culture, hip-hop, and what it... You know, where it came from, out of nothing. It grew out of nothing. And it is a voice for people who, you know, are confronting great problems in life and little future. Hmm. And this finally, at least a voice of expression. And you find that around the world, hip-hop has really taken on a strong movement of empowerment for minorities and people in cities. And as the great migrations to the cities continue around this whole urbanization and favelization of the world, hip-hop is a great tool.
Mm-hmm. Around the world.
A universal youth culture, I mean, through people in their 30s, because Henry has traveled to Brazil and all around Europe and even in Sweden. It's a kind of international language.
It permeates,
and it crosses classes in a way that it doesn't.
It does.
Well, I wanted to ask you that because talk about crossing classes. I mean, you, Henry Chalfant, Kathleen Chalfant on the song is you. Henry, you are Anglo-American.
Right. WASP.
Did you come to hip-hop from an outside viewpoint?
Sure. I mean, I was an artist. I'm a WASP artist in New York in the 70s, and I was taking pictures of graffiti for a while, and eventually, after several years, I met graffiti writers, and they originally thought I was a cop, because here I am, almost 40, and what am I doing out there? And so I've got to be a cop. I'm waiting for a big bust. They were waiting, and it never happened. They began to trust me. And what I was doing made me an integral part of the New York scene back there, the culture at the time. They needed me to get their pictures. And I needed them for information about it to do things. We did a film out of it. We did a book out of it. And so it was a one hand washes the other kind of situation, which allowed me to be part of the scene.
Henry, what made them trust you initially?
Well, I am a fairly non-judgmental sort of person.
You seem it, actually. Yeah.
And I think the fact that nothing bad ever happened and they began to tell me everything, and still nothing bad ever happened. And so they just trust grew. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to run from the cops with them and things like that. But I did stuff which I probably was a little scary, like go into the yards when they were painting and crawling under trains and things like that.
Yeah, but this was illegal, too, and
yeah,
it still is.
Yeah, yeah, it was illegal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was archiving something and documenting something, so I felt it was okay.
And
but,
I think there's another thing that Henry was honestly interested in both the lives and the art of these people. And when you were talking before, this was an extraordinary thing because it was people who empowered themselves through art.
Art, mm-hmm. Music,
yeah.
And
dance.
Spray painting, mm-hmm. Visual mm-hmm. arts, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people, of course, even listening now might say graffiti is art.
Right. Yeah. It's vandalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't say it's only vandalism. Hmm. And that's what people who say it's vandalism won't usually admit, that it's also something else.
What makes it art?
Well, it's got form and color and shape, and it expresses people's mood. Hmm. And it expresses, even if they want to depict something figuratively, they can do that. And simply the mere fact of writing your name in an aesthetic way makes it art.
And not every time somebody puts their name on a wall is it a work of art.
No, some right. of it's bad art.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also, it's graffiti done on the trains like it was in the 70s and 80s is like a performance. Hmm. It's, you know, you just get one time. It's ephemeral, for starters. You just get one try at it. You can't say, oh, I'm going to tear this up and throw it away if you don't like it in your enclosed studio. You're out there for 3.5 million people to see.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look like a fool, you feel like a fool. So it's like a performance. You know?
is graffiti art still being practiced?
Oh, yeah, but it's very different. Not in New York, not hardly at all. It's being, you know, in Italy, they're still going to the yards and painting trains.
And there's
but it's allowed.
Well, there,
no,
it isn't allowed.
It's not allowed anywhere.
But there's a system in Italy of small gauge railways, and in a way, in an odd way, we spend a fair amount of time in Italy, and they are perfect canvases. But it couldn't be less like urban life because what you go out in the middle of a field and find a little two car narrow gauge train with top to bottom murals using elements of Italian culture, columns and marble statues and broken pediments and colors. The color sense, the Italian graffiti has the most vibrant color sense. And there they sit, these little two-car trains in the middle of these beautiful fields.
And so, but since
but
it is,
not all. I mean,
it's outlawed. But I wonder if we tried to harness that energy, that artistic energy, and like have people spray paint just canvases and then show those in a gallery. Oh, yeah. That wouldn't work, right?
That's done. I mean, that's a whole world where that's happened. The 1980 generation, a bunch of them got taken up by collectors. And their canvases are being sold for 30 and 40, 50,000 euros at auctions, you know, at Sotheby's and that kind
wow.
of thing. So that's happened. But, you know, it isn't the same for me. It doesn't have, you know, it becomes art in its own right.
Yeah, yeah.
The other graffiti on the trains had a vibrancy that maybe some of the canvases lack if they're just a name on a canvas.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, some of the best artists have gone beyond that and they've evolved into being artists.
And how about the musical artists in hip-hop?
Well, it's gone way from the early sort of improvisational, let's just try out anything, bricolage of the beginning into, you know, it's a vast money-making commercial enterprise.
It's a machine now.
It's a big machine. And it's gotten boring as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I hardly ever listen to it now.
What year was Naughty by Nature that we just
92.
Heard?
92. 92, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, 16 years.
Yeah.
And here we are. Some 42 years later with the two of you, the Chalfonts, on The Song Is You. Kathleen, it's up to you next for songs.
Next, I think we're talking about performances and young people. So the next song we've thought of is a song called Yesterday's Girl by a group called The Neils. And one half of The Neils is our daughter-in-law, Katrina Neils. And the producer of this record, it comes from, is our son, David Chalfant, and they are the parents of our grandchildren. And the Neils, at the moment, most of the time, consists of the sisters Katrina and Narissa Neils. Sometimes it goes back to its life as a five-person rock band, but usually it's a singer-songwriter duo consisting of our daughter-in-law and her sister.
Mm. And is that what we're about to
hear? We're about to hear Yesterday's Girl, sung by Katrina and Narissa Neils, written by Narissa Neils.
Love the Neils.
Aren't they good, our girls?
So good. Yesterday's Girl.
Yesterday's
Now, not
girl.
Being able to hear the words, what's it basically about? Do we know? Or does it even matter?
If
right? It's such a great song.
It's a great song. It's about.
I mean, Yesterday's Girl, of course, would be somebody's old girlfriend.
Or maybe, I wasn't born yesterday. I don't know. Yeah. Something
no,
like that.
I think it's broken love.
Yeah. Broken love.
Yeah.
Isn't that what most songs are about?
Yes, they
in some
are.
Way
yes.
Or
yeah.
another.
They are.
Well, speaking of unbroken love, you two and 42 years together. So how did you two meet? You're from two coasts, right?
Yeah.
Kathleen, Sacramento. Right. Henry, you're from?
From Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And I went to college in California, Stanford, and met Kathy. There. And even though I'm 5 years older than she, She was a fast student and I was a slow student. So we overlapped. We
Wait, how do you mean that? Socially or by...
No, by...
No, no. Yeah, yeah. No, no.
No, no. No, no.
No, I mean, I took a leave of absence from college.
We wouldn't have met because we're 5 years apart.
I was, yeah.
But Henry took a year off, so we were there together, and that's how...
Yeah, and when I came back from my year off, I decided to take Greek and major in Greek.
And classical Greek.
And classical Greek.
And that was my freshman year.
And that was your major.
Mm-hmm. And I took Greek, too.
Had you been acting before this, Kathleen?
I meant to take acting at Stanford, but I was 17 and I had a boyfriend, another boyfriend. And he wasn't in school and the only time we could see each other was at night and the theater was at night. And so I ended up somehow leaving the theater for 3.5 years and studying classical Greek, which was not a bad thing to do. And then Henry and I encountered each other in the middle of this detour for both of us, really. Mm-hmm. And we had wonderful, wonderful teachers then. I mean, it was in the 60s, and I think everybody thought the world was going to go on forever and that it wasn't insane to study classical Greek if you could. And there were, at the time we were at Stanford, 60 undergraduate majors in Greek.
Whoa.
Which was, and that had entirely to do with the faculty, one of whom, Charles Bai, who writes quite a lot about Greek language and culture, is still one of our closest friends. So
our friends who are listening in California to this will probably know him, or maybe.
Well, he's here now.
He's in Cambridge.
And one of the things leading to the next song, one of the things that happened to both of us in our tenure at Stanford is we both fell in love with Italy.
Yeah, an abiding love for Italy.
And you go there every year, is that right?
We've been going there every year for the last 10 years. We lived in Rome for 2 years back in 1970. Mm. And that gave us, you know, a very strong attachment to the place.
And to the music?
And to the music. And so, you know, in our recent returns, we've discovered Paolo Conte, and he's just this wonderful, amazing jazz singer and absurd and wonderful and symbolic writer.
Right, and fierce. He's got a lot of backbone because, however, almost everything in Italy is perfect. Italian popular music is sometimes a little silly, but Paolo Conte is not silly. Right. He's soulful.
Yeah.
Soulful and funny. Really,
really funny.
Funny.
One of you please tell us the name of this song.
Well, it starts with I Giardini, and when I was transferring it to my CD this morning, it had a long, long title, and I just didn't put down the rest of it.
I Giardini.
And we'll listen to it. Maybe
punto,
listen.
Punto, punto.
Yeah. Punto, punto.
Yeah.
Guardo una strada io, non ne ho mai viste così. E dove vada a finire, non so dir da qui. Il fondo è lucido e scuro di un nero già blu. Porta lontano è sicuro, ma è stato laggiù. Bei giardini là non si vedranno più. Guarda, il deserto è tatuato, leonesse e zebù. Terra di grandi sbadigli, sonagli battù. vento che tutto quanto sparire farà. In un momento i giardini ci riporterà. Giardini pensieri, dondola il sogno che hai. Come una palma, un cespuglio, una cosa che vuoi. E vedi una strada dall'alto.
Oh, it's so atmospheric too. It's a song about gardens and the wind,
yeah,
right?
And the wind and the light,
dreaming.
And
it's like the
atmosphere.
It feels like being in a playground in the winter when there are no children there. And all his songs are always like that. They're filled. They give whole worlds. And sometimes he sings, in this one he played the kazoo part of the time, and sometimes he sings in French
and sometimes
in English,
he sings sometimes
English.
Scat sometimes
and
scat
he's, and he
he's wonderful with scat.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Paolo Conte,
yep.
Molto bene,
molto bene,
e molto bravo, e molto bravo,
e bravo. He's
bravissimo.
A little hard to find, actually.
But I went to Viareggio 1 year and I saw him. I was left, Kathy had to come back for a play, and I was left over there by myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I thought, wow. And I went. It was wonderful.
Paolo
wonderful
Conte.
To see him in person.
Fantastico.
Oh. Yeah.
And it is Henry and Kathleen Chalfant.
Chalfant. My mother pronounces it Chalfant.
Chalfant. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you hear it, you know, Chalfant, Chalfant, yeah. And, you know, we're all over the place.
Our son, Dave, who is a producer and who has lots of people calling him on the phone all the time, has long since gotten tired of nobody understanding what he says. So he calls himself Dave Chalfant.
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 And then people know.
What's the derivation? What's the legacy here, the heritage?
It's Norman in English. It's Chalfant must have meant something like hot springs back in Normandy.
In the day, we always just thought
Chauffant
that it was William the Conqueror's masseur or something.
Yeah, right.
Signor Fonchot, who came over. We don't.
Well, we have to talk a little bit, Kathleen, while we have you here, before we get to the next song, about your life in theater. And I know you're wincing. It's like, oh, no, come on. I want to play more music, right?
Right.
But I have to ask you, I mean, Angels in America and Wit, I mean, these are serious, heavy plays.
But funny, both of them. Funny.
Well, true. Yes.
Funny.
I mean, hence the title Wit.
Wit,
right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Something people, I've been astoundingly lucky in my life in the theater, I have to say, since I stumbled into, I didn't do it properly. I didn't go to graduate school, which I should have done, but instead I studied acting in Italian for a while, which was fun. And then I kind of stumbled back, and we came to New York in 1973, and I started doing new plays, and that, you know, I didn't do I didn't come up in the way most people do. I came up through new plays in New York, and that way met amazing writers like Tony Kushner and Maggie Edson. And I'm now doing my second play by an amazing young playwright called Sarah Rule. I'm in a play at New Haven now called The Passion Play, in which I play Queen Elizabeth I, Hitler, and Ronald Reagan.
So,
not all at the same time.
I was going to say, all at the same time.
Great outfits.
Whoa. You embody these people? You are these people.
I don't know. I try. I say, I wear the costume and say the words, and we hope. Yes, yeah. They are.
You go again, Kathleen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing these new plays. You still are dedicated to that.
I love new plays, and I have a I've been given this enormous gift. I'm going to be in Tony Kushner's new play that's going to have its premiere. It's at the Guthrie in the spring.
Brava.
So
brava.
I've been lucky. And our daughter, as it happens, Andromache Chalfant, is a little bit in the family business. She's a set designer.
Mm-hmm. Andromache, that sounds Greek.
That is Greek.
And it means?
Well, the roots of the word aner and andros are man, and machen is to fight. So it's some combination of to fight like a man or fight men or
something
like that.
I thought mach was like to make, like a machine or machination.
German, that's German. Yeah.
But the root word is to fight.
Machen is to fight.
So machination is fight, about fighting. How interesting, our machine age.
La machina. I don't know if that's...
No, la machina.
That's Latin.
Okay.
That's
Latin. Okay.
And it may or may not come from a Greek before it, but the Greek root of the word to fight is machen.
Interesting.
And so that's Andromache's name, and she is feisty.
And Andromache, the most famous Andromache in Greek culture was Hector, the Trojan hero's wife, Andromache, who then was...
And Astyanax's mother.
So she is feisty, you say.
She is.
Isn't that just like a woman?
Mm. Oh, one of the great segues.
Of all time, right?
Of all time.
Who is singing this?
The next song is an astounding cover of Dylan's Just Like a Woman, sung by our friend Joanne Beretta, who is a cabaret singer who's just begun to sing again in New York.
Oh.
I had an older brother who died, who was 14 years older than I. So he actually, today is his birthday. He would have been 78 today.
Oh.
And he lived in San Francisco, and our friend Joanne sang in the small clubs in San Francisco, and she and my brother became friends, and then she moved to New York and was quite a well-known cabaret singer in the 60s and early 70s, and then she stopped singing, and then a year ago she started singing again. And this is from her CD, Love Life.
Love Life. Or Love.
Or
Life.
Love Life.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear.
Nobody feels any pain tonight. Everybody knows baby's got new clothes, but lately I see my ribbons and my bows have fallen from my curls. I take just she's like all carmine and her pearls. I take just like a woman. I make love just like a woman. I ache just like a woman, but I break up like a little girl. I just don't fit. Yes, I believe it's time for us to quit. When we meet again, introduced as friends, oh, please don't let on that you knew me. It was your world. I fake just like a woman. Yes, I do. I make love just like a woman. I ache just like a woman. But I break up like a little girl.
Oh, what does one say? Yeah. Hearing Joanne Beretta.
Joanne Beretta.
It's a unique version of that song.
You know, I'm thinking about this and hearing, almost rehearing Dylan's lyrics.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a gift to all of us. His writing and her performance of it, it's like a gift, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. How does it feel hearing her again singing? She's back, you said, after a while.
Yes, she started to sing again. She's had two cabaret shows in New York in the last couple of years, and this CD, and our daughter Andromache is getting married on the 19th of October, and Joanne, accompanied by Henry, will sing at the wedding. I've been hearing Joanne sing since I was a kid, and still, every time I hear her sing, it makes me cry. There's something about the quality of her voice.
And reminds you, in a way, of your brother?
It reminds me of my brother, but it's something that is beyond any particular association. It's just, you know, the way a sunset makes you cry or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Joanne was with us in Italy this summer, and she and I had so much fun. She was singing, and I was accompanying her and she was learning some Italian songs because it was really her first time in Italy. Since her father's side of the family is Italian, she was very moved by
her
that
father
whole experience.
Was an Italian sax player.
Really?
Yeah.
And with a name like Beretta.
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 Signorina Beretta.
I hear all this accompanying. You're accompanying?
Guitar.
Oh, you play guitar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And at Andromache's wedding, she's going to sing Torna Sorrento.
Oh.
Because that's where Johnny proposed to Andromache.
This
what
summer.
A family story.
Yeah.
Gosh, this is incredible. Do you think you've been good parents?
I don't know. I think Henry has always been a wonderful parent. I think I've gotten better. I think we're both pretty good grandparents. But mostly the truth of being a parent is that, as anyone who has a child knows, that person appears in all the essential ways, fully made, on the very first day of their birth. You begin to understand, you know, where in Shakespeare that people recognize their children whom they haven't seen for 20 years. And we have two remarkable children who have forgiven us our shortcomings.
Our trespasses.
In a very, very generous way. And they like us and talk to us. We talk about this all the time. When we were in our 30s and early 40s, we didn't talk to our parents, you know. And yeah, that is a family, too. It's a family that's close.
Yep. So we're grateful.
It's a gift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You said in a recent interview I read, I believe it was the New York Times, that your mother, your own mother, Kathleen, was your bridge to the outer world.
No, she was my father's bridge to the outer world.
Ah, what does that mean?
It was my father. My father was fierce and beautiful, deeply misanthropic person who was also very, very handsome. He looked kind of like Clark Gable or Robert Taylor, and that was his generation. And it was always funny because my girlfriends would always come over and I never, you know, you don't think your father's hot.
Dad, right?
And it was only years later that I realized, oh, I see what that was all about. But my mother was an immensely gregarious, philanthropic person, which is to say that she loved people and she was a bridge to the world for my father, who was a much darker creature in a way.
Well, is it there that you first heard Bach? Were you listening to music growing up?
I listened to music growing up in my family in great part from my brother. My older brother, who was Joanne's friend, he was a great lover of and aficionado of opera, particularly. Mm-hmm. And it was a way into music. It turned out, I think it was always a great disappointment to him that I didn't come to love 19th century romantic music in the way he did, but I did love 18th century music and in the case of Bach, 17th century music. And I played, perhaps as badly as it is possible to play, the cello when I was in junior high school and high school. And so while fortunately for music I've stopped, it made me come to love cello music. And Henry, and this that we're going to hear, the Bach cello suites played by the person who's known as Pablo Casals, but who's really
Pau Casals.
And we know that because Henry and I lived for a little over a year in Barcelona. And our son David was born there.
So Pau Casals is Catalá.
It's Catalá.
And that's how you say Pablo in Catalá.
You still say Pau. Bach as Bach, though.
You still say Bach as Bach.
Bach is always Bach. Thank you.
How interesting you would pick the prelude from the cello suite number 3. Why? Kathleen.
Listen how it sounds like that. It touches your whole self.
You know? How was that for you to play the cello? Did your whole body reverberate?
I had the most wonderful time I've ever had. And as long as I didn't get the bow too close to the strings, nobody cared. I looked pretty good. I was an actor even then. I looked pretty good playing the cello. And I got to sit in the middle of the orchestra. The cello sit in the best place. You know, it's right in the middle next to the French horns and the bassoons. And we got to play the César Franck Symphony, which has the cellos get to play. It was great. And I learned an awful lot about music. So, also,
you spend some time, so enough to know it's Paul Casals, not Pablo, yes?
Yep.
And from the cello suite number 3, the prelude, unbelievable by Bach. I think it was H.L. Mencken who referred to Bach as Genesis 1:1.
Yes.
Oh. I remember I was on the air in Los Angeles at a radio station out there, and we all experienced an earthquake, and it happened 30 seconds before I went on the air. I was at the mic, and our studio was moving back and forth, and we were experiencing an earthquake live on the radio. And we went on the air, and that morning I just took calls from listeners asking them how they were and requests for music, and they all asked for Bach because they all felt it was grounding for them. Is that how you feel? Yeah.
It's grounding, and the way it's organized is a way that your brain is organized. Yep. It's the perfect combination of reason and the deepest emotion somehow, I think.
And so moving from that to your guilty pleasure, how appropriate.
Yeah.
Kathleen and Henry Chalfant with us on The Song Is You, and you both got together on this one, right, to pick it? Am I right?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, because this is, you know, the 60s, this is California, cars, you know, we drive around listening to the radio. And we listen to things like
And this
Willie.
Is a version of this song that imagines, he sings it, we won't say who it is because you'll figure it out, he sings it as though it means something.
And taking us back to the 60s, and you were both such activists in your own right, do you have optimism in this year and day and age?
Yeah.
We have to.
Vestigial optimism that's actually coming back.
People are beginning to appeal to the best of us again. And it's that. If you appeal to the best of us, then there'll be a world for our grandchildren.
Kathleen, Henry, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great.
Been listening to The Song Is You, produced and hosted by Bonnie Grice. The executive producer is Linda Lippman. The engineers include Charles de Montebello and Ethan Donaldson at CDM Studios in New York City, and Kyle Lynch and Matt Cooper at Peconic Public Broadcasting in Southampton, New York. To learn more and hear some sample shows, check out our website, thesongisyou.org. The Song Is You is a division of BLG Productions. Continuing adventures in public media.